Hello, dear internet strangers. My name is Kevin Carlson, and we are talking in obscurity. This is the second episode, and today is February 29th, 2020. I am joined by my co-host,
Steve Kubitz,
and today we're talking about books, like all days. Today we're talking about The Fold by Peter Kleins. We're doing a whole Peter Kleins thing here. This is the second book in the Threshold series, and this book is a direct sequel to 14. It's a side sequel, and it is also science fiction and horror. Same kind of neo-Lovecraftian horror story. Different characters, though. And this time around, we wanted to talk about who our favorite characters are, who our least favorite characters are, and I'll start off with my favorite character that we get introduced to in this book is Olaf, because he's that kind of guy that is that stock character that like, no, that isn't what is happening. It's all that's wrong. But he's also the same guy that like later on is like, yeah, shit, he's got us. Like, reveal everything to him.
He earned it. I think that, he earned the right to, reveal everything. When you get busted, you just got to accept it. Yeah, you got me. You beat me.
I don't even know why I gave him that kind of voice later, like, no, because he has a German accent. He's very German.
And no one that sounds German could be evil.
Yeah, I guess you're right. But they probably don't sound like Skeletor.
In my head, they do.
My least favorite character, and it's not because I don't like her, and I do like her, is going to be the love interest, Jamie. Because she's if you've read 14, she's a less interesting Veek. Her interesting bit is she was in a motorcycle accident and has scars, but she's still like very smart and a computer programmer. And how about you?
I mean, so I think overall, I'm a big fan of, I like Mike, the protagonist. He's the main guy, but he is essentially just a superpowered Nate from 14. But overall, I like him because I like the sort of generally like the everyman character, even though he's not an everyman because he is a photographic memory. So he's super smart, but I just, overall, he's the main guy you see. He's the guy you spend most time with. Overall, I do like him.
He is really trying hard to be the everyman.
Yeah.
I mean, that's his whole deal.
Yeah. He's very likable, but he's got his own issues to work through. But overall, I think he's probably the character I still like the most, which sort of in the opposite. We talked about it last month with 14, where all the characters seem very likable and have their own sort of quirks, and you can really relate and like them. This one, to me, is less so. So to me, I'm not saying that every book where you like the protagonist is a bad book, but in this one, I feel like the reason I sort of am so drawn to Mike is because the characters are just less interesting.
And who would be your least favorite?
Honestly, probably Arthur, the boss character.
Oh, okay.
I find him to be very generally kind of just...
He's just there.
He's there. He's a boring, like, shadowy boss figure that's like,
He's less fun Olaf.
Yeah, and he's not... The thing is, he's he's the main boss. So you think, okay, what's the... But he seems to be just as middle management acting as Olaf.
Yeah.
He doesn't really... To me, like, you could wipe that character from the whole book, and really nothing would change.
Yeah. In terms of the Threshold series, because this is the second book in that, I like this book, how I describe it to people, 90% as much as I like 14. Because there are a couple things, and we talked about this several times before, where we guessed... Well, I guessed the whole twist of the book by the end of the introduction. So, like, that's the first 10 minutes of this book, if you're listening to it as an audiobook, or it's the first, like, 20 pages in the actual book. Right at the end of it, I was like, oh, yeah, I've read the synopsis, the publisher synopsis. I know where this is going. And I wasn't wrong, so that was a little upsetting for me because, like, 14, it's a mystery early on. It's a little slower start, but... It's a mystery, and you're learning things as the characters are going. Whereas in The Fold, I always felt like I knew more than the characters because of just that introduction. And the other thing is, while I feel like I can listen personally to Peter Kleins' characters talk forever about anything. They could be discussing a phone book, and I'd be like, this is very engaging. But with The Fold, the difference is they're all very similar characters. Everybody's a kind of a genius. They're either engineers or physicists or doctors or Mike, who has superpowers, mental superpowers. So nobody isn't a genius. When the effect it is that has on this is everybody kind of runs together. So the side characters are a little harder to remember because you don't have the carpenter, the military guy, the actor, the artist. You just have smart guy, smart girl, smart girl, smart guy, and boss guy, and other boss guy, and Mike.
In a weird way, you know, you talk about like characters being interesting, and like what made 14 so interesting is how everyone's kind of the diversity of characters.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, even though you can do a story where a lot of people are doing the same thing, and you know, I always bring this up. This is a good thing to bring up. Alien, mm-hmm. The first Alien.
Yeah.
They're all military, they're all like scientists, but they all have enough differences. And granted, it's a visual medium, so it's a little different because you can see physically, mm-hmm. but you can make characters that all are all doing the same thing and still make them memorable. But the conflict, since the conflict generally is the story and what's happening in the story, you don't really get a chance to really get your teeth into these characters because, you know, for the most part, they're sort of reacting to what's happening that you've kind of already seen coming.
Yeah.
Which is never a good... You never want to know more than the characters in the story.
And, like, it's a much more visceral story than 14, so the pacing is a lot faster because of that. And, like, that means you can't have as much time with these characters to learn who they are, what their motivations are, what they're like. You get little things. I mean, I still feel like his character work is still some of the best, but they ultimately they suffer a little bit from that. Overall, what you can expect from this story is, without getting into the spoiler section yet, it's about these scientists who have created this portal that you walk through one, and you show up across a football field, and you walk through another one. It's called the Albuquerque Door, after the Looney Tunes. He went to Albuquerque. They've invented the teleporter, basically. They invented you walk through here, and you can be instantly a mile away. And that's the big invention that everybody's looking at. Except, you know, it's not quite that simple. It has a whole... There's a more of a darker ramification, or it wouldn't be a horror story.
Be a very boring horror story if it was, and they invented it and it worked and that was it.
Yeah, like everything went fine.
The only struggle was who got the credit and who got the patent credit.
Like they got millions of dollars and then fell out and yeah.
They said they'd be friends forever, but...
They really weren't. It was.
It turns out the real teleportation were the friends we made along the way.
they were the Beatles of teleportation door inventors. They just broke up and did their own things. And, like, Olaf went on and had a...
Nobel Prize-winning career. No, I think, though, you know, not to interrupt, but, like, you know, so you talk about the character work and how, you know, it's such a... It is a much... I even think it's shorter in terms of, like, time and pages. Mm-hmm. If I remember correctly, I think The Fold is some... Or 14 is something like 330 pages. Mm-hmm. I think this might only be, like, 280 pages.
I'm not entirely certain on that,
So it is a substantially shorter, quick hitting book.
Yeah, it is a much faster paced book. I will give you that. So I think we're gonna dive right in, and we're gonna get to the more spoiler part of this, and we'll talk about the synopsis. So your time to check out now, if you're planning on reading the book and you don't want to hear the rest of this, is now. Okay, so we're gonna do the quick and dirty synopsis. Going to be a little bit shorter this time. The book begins in the introduction. A man's coming home, and his wife's on the phone with her friend. And whenever he comes home, he doesn't recognize her and pulls a gun on her. And he doesn't know who she is. And then we jump out of that, and we're into the main story. Sort of like 14, how it does that quick. Like, here's these characters, this thing happens, and now we jump into the main story. Similar. And then we meet our protagonist in this one. His name is Leland Erickson. And weird name. Everybody calls him Mike. And there's a reason they explain that later. So he's just your typical teacher, but he has a superpower where he has a photographic memory. And it's not just a photographic memory. He remembers everything perfectly. Everything that has ever happened to him. So his friend during college is a guy that is now working for the government, and he ends up roping Mike into this because this big government project that he is overseeing is about teleportation. And who doesn't want to work on the teleportation project? So he's going to be, Mike's going to be his friend Reggie's man on the ground, his liaison to this big super secret teleportation project. And he ends up going to this project and meeting all these people, these scientists, and they're very secretive about how all this works, and it's a big to-do, and they call it the Albuquerque Door. And basically how it works is there's a building on one side of the campus, and whenever they turn on the Albuquerque Door, you walk through the door, and then you show up in another building on the other side of the campus about a mile away. So this is a big revolutionary thing. And Mike's trying to find out, why isn't the project done? Like, if it works, then why isn't this being produced? And they give him these vague reasons. They still have to do all these experiments and everything. And he's just getting the runaround from all these different characters. And the mystery unravels more and more until one day he's observing them doing a test. And one of the character that's doing this is a guy named Bob. And he's gone through the Albuquerque Door some 80 times. No problems. And Bob, on this day, walks through the door, and when he walks out, he is fucked up. He is just walking dead kind of looking guy now. He's been, like, through the worst world war. He's got all of these injuries, and he's bleeding everywhere, and they don't know what has happened to him, why this happened. And they can't really explain it to Mike what happened. So, it comes out, as the story goes on further, that they don't actually know how the Albuquerque Door works. They invented a teleporter before this that just didn't work, and they were going to be the biggest frauds in the world. And they knew that they were going to run out of funding, and everybody's going to realize that they're frauds that couldn't make this work. And they all got drunk one day, and they found a old treatise from a 19th century inventor, a guy named Kotarovich. And Kotarovich is the inventor of the building in 14 who made that whole big machine. So they plug his equations in, and suddenly the Albuquerque Door works. But it doesn't work as a teleporter, really. What they find out, and what Mike finds out through the story, is that it actually creates an interdimensional portal. So you don't actually walk through the door and show up in the other building. You show up in the other building in a slightly different universe where the details of that universe are so similar to what you just left that it seems like you've teleported, but there is no teleportation. And that's the big central mystery. And at the end, like in 14, they revisit how, with more people around, the effect magnifies. So with the more people around, they end up finding that alternate universe again, where there's the alpha predators and there's those horrible squid whales and the monsters. And even a character from 14 returns as a villain. He's this horrible, grotesque monster. And a lot more people die in the fold. And at the end of it, they end up blowing up the whole thing. And at the very end, after that's all done, these people from this shadowy organization show up. And you find out they're the characters from 14. And that's the end of the story.
Dun, dun, dun. I think that's a quick hitting story. I think it's funny. When I first read it, my gut instinct was I liked it more than 14, mm-hmm. which made me a leper in our friend group. I remember I would get whipped, Merce just horribly hit with belts. It was very violent stuff. But
Rosebush branch.
They used to make me go outside and pick my own switch. And, I think having sort of revisiting it, I'm definitely more team 14 now, but there's still things about the fold that I really love in terms of the story. The twist, is you knew within, like I said, 5 pages or in this case, like 5 minutes that, okay, I know what the twist is. I get it, but I think sometimes we overrate being surprised by twists. Like it's amazing when your twist gets you. But not everything has to be M. Night Shyamalan. Not everything has to be that. sometimes the story can be good enough, or even if you know the twist is coming, it's still well done. You know, Michael Myers, there's no twist in Michael Myers movies, but like the Halloween movies are generally pretty, you know, when they're good, they're very good. Even though there's no like, oh my God, it turns out that Michael Myers, you know, not everything has to be the Darth Vader reveal.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. But I can't say that I wasn't a little disappointed, because whenever the guy that doesn't recognize his wife, if you read even the publisher's synopsis, and if you read 14, if you haven't read 14 and you're reading the second book in a series, what are you doing? I don't even know who you are right now.
I don't like you. I don't respect you.
You obscure list. Oh, please don't leave. Please don't turn off. You're my only friend. I'm sorry, Steve, but this one listener that listens to us is my only friend. That all aside, I can't say that I wasn't disappointed whenever I was like, oh, well, that the reason he doesn't recognize his wife is because clearly he's from a different dimension, because that's what the whole last book was about, was alternate dimensions. As for, like, the main character, what we said in the non-spoiler side of this is that he really is just Nate from 14, but now he has a superpower. He has this whole eidetic memory, and the love interest is a girl named Jamie, and Jamie is just Veek, but not Indian, and a little less interesting. And that leads into my greater point about the characters in this. I still love Peter Cline's characters, and I still love Ray Porter's performance of those characters, but they're all a little bit lesser than I think the characters are in 14. You had a really good point about Olaf that we had discussed at one point, about his accent.
One thing I really appreciate about the performance aspect, if you're reading the book, you won't notice this because you're reading it. But if you listen to the audiobook performance, clearly, you know, my day job, I am a radio producer. So I do deal with VO work, voiceover work, not to this extent of an audible performance, but I do know what the process of, you know, content and how to specialize and how to make it so it sounds good. So clearly, he wasn't just performing in an autopilot. You know, right? He clearly knew the material, because there's a great bit. If you listen to Olaf's accent at the beginning of the story and his accent at the end of the story, they're just different enough. And I remember before the twist, you know, where I knew the twist was, you know, I knew the twist, but before the thing's revealed, I remember thinking, wow, he kind of lost his accent a little bit. Which was like, wow, that's kind of surprising given how well he, you know, Ray Porter held Veek's accent and every character's accent. I'm surprised he would, like, lose the accent. And then once I realized, no, wait a minute, look at this like an acting performance. The character you met at the beginning of the book is not the same as the character that's existing at the end of the book or in the middle of the book. So it's a very brilliant bit of sort of VO acting, changing the accent just a little bit, which I found very brilliant.
Just this side of perceptible. And, like, I've re-listened to it, and I picked up on that after you told me about it. And it is a really good moment, because, like, the whole, like, thing in the fold, and one of the terrible things that these characters find out is all of them, except for Mike, who's never walked through the Albuquerque door until, like, the very end, they are all not the people that they know. That's why everybody is a little standoffish, is because every time one of them walks through the door, and in Bob's case, he walked through it 80 times, the person who came out was a slightly different version of them. Like, every time you go through the door, you're not going to another, you're not teleporting, you're going to another universe that is, since the multiverse is supposedly infinite, there's nearly infinite number of universes that will be so similar to this one that you wouldn't notice it. And they even have this great, like, details how they point out where Arthur forgets his anniversary. He didn't actually forget. It's a different day in this universe, and he just plays it off as though he forgot. And they all kind of do that. Like, Olaf gets mad because he's convinced that Bob, the guy who unfortunately dies, had committed this big joke on him and moved all the stuff across the hallway to another office. But, like, what would the joke of that be? I spent an entire day moving all of your furniture and setting up your computer. Has anybody ever moved furniture? I've moved, like, 7 times in my life. I'm going to tell you that moving is not fun. There's no punchline at the end of moving. It's just, ugh.
I think that those little things like that are the thing this book does really well. Even though you know the twist and you get where it's coming from, and I don't want to harp on that too much for you, but the little things, the little details like that as you're sort of unraveling this tale, are clever. And I do love the idea of you can know somebody, but just slightly little variations of the world. And it shows you that if there was a multiverse, we look at the sort of multiverse in like the sort of the superhero aspect where there's big differences.
Yeah.
Like, what if, you know, Germany won World War II? Everyone, or that, you know, that's always a popular multiverse trope. Mm-hmm. There's a whole, you know, video game series that is basically that. Mm-hmm. You know, or, you know, anything like alt universe stuff where it's like, oh, what if Superman never existed? Or Superman Red Sun? What if he landed in communist Russia? There's a lot of things like that. But I like what this story does is that in reality, which is hilarious given the fact we're talking about multiverse and teleportation, but in reality, multiverses would probably just be a little variations. The little, you know, you zig when you zagged. In this case, you zagged when you zigged. Mm-hmm. So, and I think there's something really fascinating about that and the sort of fascination of we are such social creatures that we won't admit that we just don't, that clearly something's amiss, but we're so polite that we won't admit that, like, oh God, I don't know these people. I'm just gonna grit my teeth and bear it, and I'll eventually get used to this.
Yeah, I'm just gonna like accept that my anniversary is on a different day now. That I've somehow made a mistake of when I got married.
No, I remember. Yeah, I mean, but the thing is, like, there are little things like that that I find very brilliant, and I still find brilliant. I still think overall, the meat of this story is very good.
Yeah, and like the ending of this is so much more visceral in, like, because whenever they figure out what's happening is they get to a point where they can't shut off the Albuquerque door, and Portal is, since it's open to another universe, that different universe is just changing to all the different possibilities. And how Kotorovich's science apparently worked is that the more people that are around, the more the effect gets magnified, and you get to the more different universes. So like whenever there was just the scientists, they never had any problems because there was exactly that number of people and they always went to another universe that was almost exactly the same. But whenever you add in that one extra person, like with the guy at the beginning of the book, he was an observer like Mike. That's why whenever he went through the door and he came home, he was in a very different universe. That very different universe was he married somebody else. And he ends up in an insane asylum, too. And that's messed up to think about. But, like, at the end of this book, the Albuquerque door basically opens to the same parallel universe that those squid whales are. Or one of them. Because there isn't just one universe where the squales take over. There's a lot of different... I think the implication is a lot of different universes they take over. That's their whole thing, is they eat an entire universe, and then they migrate to another one like a parasite.
Which is what their plan was kind of hinted at in 14.
Yeah, and I like that. I love that horror element, is that, like, they didn't just destroy one Earth. They've destroyed many Earths.
Who knows how many.
And, like, how long have they even been doing it? How long do they live?
Yeah.
Like,
you know, there's no biology class on alpha predators.
Yeah.
So we have no idea, which... That implication of that is horrifying, like radically horrifying, because, you know, it's one thing to think about, like, oh, they took over. Okay, so it's parallel. When you look at 14 and you go to this world, you think, okay, this is a dimension for these creatures. But the scary implication is it's like the Planet of the Apes effect, where it's not a parallel dimension. It's just a different Earth, mm-hmm. which means it could happen to our Earth.
Yeah.
Which to me is much more horrifying than like this parallel, like... Don't look at it as like the upside down in Stranger Things, mm-hmm. where it's a parallel dimension and like it's just sort of it's happening in conjuncture with our universe. Think about it as a universe of a different, an actual Earth. It is a true multiverse, mm-hmm. where it's our Earth, but just a little different. In this case, alpha predators invaded it, ate everyone, enslaved humanity, and now they're gonna do it again.
Yeah,
and which I think is much more horrifying.
And the fact that they move on like a virus. And they infect the next universe and they destroy everything in it. And then they move on to the next one. And they can, like, repurpose people. Because Andrew is in this one. Again, they've repurposed his body. And they combined his corpse with all the other corpses at the end of 14. Like, unfortunately, poor Tim is in there as well.
Too beautiful for this world, Tim.
And, like, he's this horrible, grotesque monster that they fight at the end. And a lot of the characters... Like, they even call them the Marines, and all the Marines get killed. And, like, a lot of the scientists get killed, and they only succeed at the end of, through the power of friendship. I mean, the power of C4. They use C4, and they blow up the whole fucking place.
Which, it turns out, the real C4 were the friends we made along the way.
The real high explosive are the friends we've made all the way.
Yeah, and...
I think you're going to work that into everything.
I'm going to work into every single podcast now. That's my new goal, and I'm not going to apologize for it. But I think that what makes the ending so good... I actually think the ending of The Fold is better than the ending of 14. Really, I think it's just because how absolutely brutal it is.
Yeah.
Like, there's no punches pulled. In 14, you get kind of a glimpse of this horrifying universe. You know, you're like the great bit where they're looking through binoculars at what's going on, and they see the enslaved people, and they see, like, wow, this is interesting. Because they realize that this is L.A., mm-hmm. where this is all happening in L.A.
Yeah,
you don't really. They think, oh, that's weird. Why? How are we still? I guess, you know, because the valley is the same. They realize the valley is exactly the same. Mm. There's just no buildings.
Yeah,
you know, in 14, and which is horrifying too. But what I like about The Fold is that universe that you got a glimpse of punches you in the face and rips your throat out.
Yeah, like, I love how we've talked about this before. Is all of the villains in this are threatening, and like you, it isn't like in Star Wars, or even in, say, the Marvel MCU, where the villains, you think, how did these people, like, take over?
Yeah.
How did they actually succeed in taking over everything? Whereas in this, whenever you meet even the low levels things to the Alpha Predators, you get why they win.
Yeah, they fuck shit up.
Like, because they're not bothered by machine guns or our weaponry really at all. And, like, it's not that they can't be killed. It's just that you're unlikely to kill enough of them fast enough.
Which is that why the scene with the Marines is a really important scene.
Yeah.
And because,
like, 14 doesn't really get through that.
Because a lot of, like, I've always talked about this before in other like, medias and fiction, is what is this creature's endgame? And because the moment it gets to our military, it's over. Like, I think about it to, like, somebody like It Follows.
Yeah.
Like, it's creepy, but it can be killed, clearly. It can get blasted with a gun. So, clearly, you get someone that's trained, that creature's probably not much of a problem. And there are other things like that where, but in this universe, in this sort of these monsters, even the grunts, who are literally the, like, think of it as an invasion. You don't send your best guns at the start. These are literally the grunt front line. And they are just they easily overmatch every person that's there. This is the people that destroy the Marines.
Yeah.
That Marines aren't killed by Alpha Predators or even like the strong, you know, guards. They're killed by the freaking ground crew.
Yeah.
Which, that should tell you that this is a universe that if they get in, they're going to win.
And that's a big Lovecraft idea where there is no fighting them. There's only preventing them. Not being focused on by them, to avoid their gaze. That's what every character in Lovecraft is basically getting at, is we just want to avoid them because the moment they focus on us, that's basically the end. So we're going to move on to our parting thoughts at this point. And I feel like this novel, what it does is it really does move the universe forward. And I like that you find out that it's a sideways sequel to 14, because at the very end, the people that show up at the, like, after everything's destroyed are characters from 14. And they've apparently become a sort of organization.
Which, you know, it's amazing. You know, every time I moved an apartment, I never become a member of a shadow organization. The most I've ever gotten were roaches that weren't green and didn't have an extra arm.
Yeah.
But what I think overall, what I love about this story a lot, and I still love it about this story, is that it really shows sort of the inevitability of when, if you discover this universe, or not this universe, you discover these Alpha Predators and you discover sort of their world and what they do, it's over. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it's not a matter, you can't fight them off. There's no winning.
Yeah.
You're at best, you can maybe survive for a little bit, but you're inevitably going to lose and you're going to die. And everyone you know is going to die. And I think there's something really scary about that. Well, 14 is scary in the sense that, like, the strange and, like, something's amiss, which I think is very scary. This one is just instantly the whole multiverse idea is just alone would be scary. throw in the fact that there's a chance where how many versions of this has already happened, which to me is ultimately terrifying.
Yeah.
But billions and millions of Earths are probably already conquered and destroyed.
What you were just saying there reminded me of a thing that, like, one of the characters at the very end is Beak from the first novel comes and offers Mike a job. And that, like, really, like, I love that moment where she basically tells him that, like, once you know that this is what reality is like, it changes your life. This is what your life becomes, is once you know that there are these monsters out there and we need to be constantly vigilant about keeping them from getting in, you, one of two things either happens. Either this breaks you or this becomes your life now. Like, you can't go back to being a school teacher. You're now the guy that knows that monsters can be here and you need to, like, you need to stop that. And, like, I love that ending is that, because it, like, in 14, it has this feeling that you never get in the traditional Lovecraft stories, that feeling of resistance, that there is something we can do, and it isn't necessarily fight them, but it is prevent them from ever getting here. And I like that, like, it kind of has a hopeful tone to it.
Which is very, very rare in Lovecraft. Very rare in horror films or horror, that kind of neo-gothic horror in general.
Yeah.
There's that feeling of dread usually wins out in the end. I always think back, you know, to most Stephen King's horror is not happy endings.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of Lovecraft stuff, you know, The Call of Cthulhu is not a happy ending.
No.
And I like the idea that there's this universe, you know, in the threshold universe that... Yeah, it's not good. It's not hunky-dory that these alpha predators and these creatures exist that can destroy everything. And who knows how long it would take. Could be weeks, could be days, could be literally hours. You never know. They don't really get into how they sort of what they do into the worlds. But there's this the plucky kind of humanity of it is that if there is a chance to stop it, that's going to win out.
Yeah.
Even if you know there's no hope, that the power of just that, we're going to do something. Even if it doesn't work, we're going to do something. And I think there's something really cool about that fact that this book and this sort of universe has a much more hopeful tone while still maintaining that, like, absolutely just terrifying, gruesome, reality-bending monsters.
Yeah. Well, I think that's where we're going to end it today. Again, I've been Kevin Carlson.
And I've been Steve Kubitz.
And keep reading. Thank you.